You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. If you gamble, use your game sense. Visit GameSenseAB.ca to find out more. Colin Livingston joins us once again. And Colin had the opportunity to be at the F1 Live for the first time in my life this past weekend in Montreal. A well-oiled machine as far as the presentation of everything. It was a little bit wet for qualifying, but then on race day it dried off and everything was good to go. You know, it was exciting. There was some passing. It was exciting, I think, more so because Leclerc had to start from 19th, so he moved up a lot. But, you know, Verstappen basically led from start to finish. You know, when he went into the pits, it's the only time he really trailed there. My only concern with F1 right now is that outside of the top two teams, like, you kind of know it's going to be Red Bull and Ferrari. And if Ferrari's car doesn't break down, then they got a chance to compete. But then after that, everybody else, like, then it's Mercedes. And then after that, it's like, well, you know, geez, Alpine, everyone gets excited. Wow, they're sixth and seventh or seventh and eighth. And I wonder if they can become more competitive with more teams like IndyCar.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's slowly coming, but that's also a function of F1 for, you know, the last, you know, in this current era of the hybrid, that it was only Mercedes for the last 8 years. Now you've got two teams at the top. I mean, you know, throughout Mercedes' run, Ferrari has had a couple of challenges. You know, Red Bull obviously won the Drivers' Championship last year, albeit, you know, with a bit of controversy. But now you've got, you know, the two at the top. Mercedes is starting to close the gap. But to get the competition level that you see in IndyCar would require even more tweaking to the formula, because IndyCar essentially only has two engine suppliers and only one chassis. So everyone's pretty much running the same bodywork. Everyone's pretty much running with the same power. At some tracks, Chevy's a little bit better. At some tracks, Honda's a little bit better. You know, Honda and Chevy both drive each other to get better. But yeah, I mean, within the group of IndyCar, I mean, the driver level is relatively high. The track diversity is amazing. I mean, they go from you know, short little ovals like Iowa to obviously Indianapolis. It's 2.5 miles, and then, you know, run on some great street and road courses. So you know, there's also a little bit more you know, driver diversity that needs to happen there. I don't think F1 is looking for that level of competition. I think they're more than happy to have, you know, one or two teams at the top, a bunch of, you know, mid-pack fighters, and then, you know, the couple of teams that'll always be nipping at the heels. But yeah, I mean, you know, you got to see it firsthand, though. You know, you've been to, you know, not that they compare, but you've been to the race at Wetaskiwin. You know, you've seen live racing and get to know, like, what you see in person is so much different than what you see on TV. What do you walk away from now that you've seen that F1 race in person?
Well, number one, the acceleration factor for the cars is mind-blowing in person. Also, just the sound when they all came around the first time, right, and they're all through the back straight, the sound there to me was amazing. I liked it a lot. I actually enjoyed, you know, to me, watching the pit crew, right, like, from my vantage point, right above them, and seeing when mistakes, even the best crews make mistakes, like how McLaren just bent over Lando Norris, their own guy, where they called him in and they hadn't, so he's literally waiting in line to get, and then when they got him in, they didn't have tires ready, then they had to put him on medium tires, and then I watched Alpine, like, a few laps later, and they did the double, pit change to perfection. How you should. And I'm just like, man, even the best teams in the world, someone on the headset, like, I would have loved to have leaned on the McLaren headset at that point. That's the one thing I wished I would have, because you can do that in F1. You can hear what they're saying, because it would have been fascinating to me to hear what was going on at that point, because that was a major blunder.
Did you get to see Lando Norris's quote after the race?
Well, I saw his reaction. But yeah, I'm guessing I did see his quote.
they did a post-race interview and they said, well, what do you think? He said, well, you know, I got to be honest. He's like, I came in for my pit stop when the team said, and there were no tires there. And it turns out the tires are important for these cars to run. So
it was amazing to me. I was like once I saw a car leave, I come in and I'm like, why'd they bring him in? There's no tires. Then all of a sudden you see the guy sprinting to go get tires. I was just like, oh wow, that's someone's not going to be happy over that.
And that happened a few years ago to Danny Ricciardo as well. Leading the race at Monaco with when he was still with Red Bull, they called him into pit and they didn't have the tires even close to ready. And of course in Monaco, they don't have everything really close. Everything's at the back of the garage. So, it ended up costing him the race there. So it happens. I mean, it's inexplicable when it happens and it's comical for us, but these guys do make mistakes, and that's largely what the difference is in winning, losing, getting a podium is who makes the least mistake and who can actually recover from it.
Well, it happened with Leclerc in Monaco this year, right? When he came in the pits and he had to wait. And that basically cost him. And then he came out, he was fourth, and then you can't pass on that track. I will say, you know what I liked about it? The track in Montreal, there was a lot of areas to pass. When you're coming near the end of lap one, there was lots of passes in the final turn, and then there was lots of passes on different areas of the track. So that was one thing that I really appreciated. The only thing I didn't like from my vantage point sitting in the paddock club was there wasn't a TV so you had people in the grandstands who could see the race live, but then there was a TV showing every other part of the track, right? So they were following the people on the track, so you could see the passes. There wasn't that in the paddock. You had to turn around and literally walk in to see it. So that was my only, if there's one thing that I would change is to say, well, put a TV on the other side so then all the people can see it, because that makes it more entertaining.
Well, yeah, I mean, Octane has done a really good job. I think they did a great job when they had the Edmonton Indy, and I was fortunate enough to have a suite during those races, and they had TVs everywhere, and they were basically the same suites that they use in like the temporary suites that they use in Montreal. They moved them out for that. So I haven't actually got to see what the Paddock Club suites are like. Those are, they're a permanent structure now. So I'm really surprised that they don't have that easy access for you. But, little thing that most people won't know and you don't see on TV is the boat ride you have to take to get there.
Well, it's one of them you have to take. It's kind of an option, but you're able to walk. And the walk-in was way quicker than the boat ride. So I wouldn't, we walked literally right by the lineup to the boats. And I was like, why are you people waiting in line here to take a boat that you could literally just walk basically 400 yards to get to? So that part I found quite comical, actually. I was like, yeah. I was already, having my first beer and people were still sitting in the boat. So that was a rookie move.
There you go. Yeah. Maximize volume, eh?
You know, as we're joined by Colin Livingston for the Cantor Racing Report, we talk all the time, or you do, we talk about the driver's skill, we talk about the cars that are ready to step in F1, but I'm interested to know, like, how much maneuvering is there behind for, like, the pit crew and the engineer? Like, do those guys ever become free agent? Let's say, one of your also-ran teams, do they try to steal the top mechanic or whatever, an engineer on the other side to try to even out, or do those things not happen?
No, there's a lot of movement between the teams, but the Concord agreement and the structure of F1 is that there needs to be, and I can't remember what they call them. I think they call them gardening holidays, so that anyone that's of any importance to a team can't go to work immediately for another team. They basically have to take a leave of absence for like 6 months. And I'm making up the timeline because I don't really know, but so that if they have any, intellectual property, if they have any technical knowledge, if they have something that's proprietary to the team, that's not going to be relevant when they go to their new team. So they, there is a little bit of protection there, but yeah, absolutely. I mean, Red Bull went absolutely hog wild on Mercedes engine department last year, knowing that they were going to be starting there or taking over the Honda engine department this year. So there's a lot of those people who've been sitting on the sidelines that are going to start going to work with those guys. But yeah, there's a lot of crossover for sure.
Colin, now we move to NASCAR, and some sad news. Breton Smith passed away yesterday. He was a legendary promoter and track owner. I think he He was the head of Speedway Motorsports. They own like 11 tracks, and then they host all these different NASCAR races. So that's obviously a big loss in the NASCAR kind of on the racing thing. But I do want to get your thoughts on Pinty's because you guys were you made your debut in just outside of St. John's at the Eastbound International Speedway in Avondale coming up here this weekend. What do you know about the track, and how different is this track going to be, or how similar is it to the other ones you've raced on?
Well, that's the fun part. I'm actually in St. John's right now, so you can't see what I'm looking at, but I have St. John's Harbor just out my window of the hotel here, so it's pretty cool. You know, we don't get that in Wetaskiwin or in Saskatoon for sure. The track is really, really unique. I'm excited to get out there. I got to spend lunch today with our transporter driver, Ron Hall, another guy that, you know, a very unsung hero, the guy that, you know, he's going to travel across, literally across the country and back this year, that most people will never hear of. And, you know, of course, there's one of those guys on almost every team, but, the track is 3/8 of a mile. So it's a fairly long track by our standards for an oval. Decent amount of banking apparently in the corners. I thought it was pretty flat, but they build it up. Now the unique thing about Eastbound is our front straightaway also doubles as a drag strip. So that part is completely flat. When you get into the corners, you start driving onto banking. So it's going to be a real unique sensation for the drivers. And these corners are huge. Like, we're in the corner for so long. You really going to need to make sure that your car is set up. Like, the teams who can make that adjustment from flat to banking, they're going to get up to the top of the timesheets pretty quick. And apparently, pardon me, on the back straightaway, there's a little hump about halfway down. So, it's going to be crazy. When you go through turns 3 and 4, there's banking, but as you exit turn 4, the banking goes away. So you're really going to shoot to the outside, you know, really, really make passing difficult. If you set somebody up, you know, in say turn 3, if you don't have that pass completed, it's going to make things really, really interesting. But, you know, very, very few of our drivers have been out here. A couple guys came out and did some late model racing. So it's all brand new to all of us, and we'll find out who can adapt the quickest. But there's a lot of buzz here in the town. I mean, there's festivals going on, there's parties everywhere, up and down George Street. There's lots of welcome race fans banners. So yeah, I think Mike James and the guys out here are going to put on a good show, and we're going to do our part.
So when you talk about the challenges of that track and you have 22 cars entered, does that make it more or less likely that people will be able to pass with that many cars on the track?
Well, you know, what's going to happen is there's going to be, you know, probably 6, 8, 10 that are going to be moderate. Like, they're going to be competitive and will be running up front. The cars in the middle, we're going to have a number of cars that are, you know, a couple seconds off the pace. And what we saw at our last race in Chaudière is that when those guys are not really following NASCAR's rules, or sometimes they just don't pay attention, they don't have a good spotter to let them know what's going on, they can get in the way. And, you know, the lead lap cars were actually making contact with, the lap down cars. When they're getting lapped for the first time, they have every right to try and fight for their position to stay on the lead lap. But after that, it gets a little bit silly to try and keep fighting and holding up the leaders. But they provide a bit of an opportunity. If your car's handling really well on the inside and NASCAR tells these guys to go to the outside, they become a bit of a pick, and you can use them to your advantage. You really have to plan it out. And it's something that, you know, between driver and spotter, if you time it the right way, you can really, make up a lot of time and gain a lot of ground on the rest of the field.
Well, Colin, best of luck this weekend. We'll talk to you next Thursday. Have a good one.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys.